West, a Middle-earth SVG podcast. My name is Charles. With me today are Richard and Ian, and welcome to our first list review. So our patrons have sent us some lists to review today, so we'll be reviewing five different lists. If you're interested in more content and some perks, check out our Patreon page. The link will be in the description. We appreciate all of our supporters. Check it out. The first list that we're going to review today is from a patron named Oni. He has sent us a list that is Lothlorien and Numenor Alliance. So just go over the list quickly. In the Lothlorien list, we have Galadriel leading one Galadrim knight with shield and bow, 8 Galadrim warriors with shield, 3 Galadrim warriors with spear and bow, 4 guard of the Galadrim court, and 2 wood elf warriors with bow. And then in the Numenor warband, we have Elendil leading 1 warrior of Numenor with banner, 7 warriors of Numenor with shield, 6 warriors of Numenor with shield and spear, 4 warriors of Numenor with bow and spear, and a final warband with a captain of Numenor on horse with a lance, leading 1 warrior of Numenor with bow. So this is an 800-point list, 40 models, and 11 bows. Any thoughts?
It's very interesting. You definitely don't see this combination as often as obviously like the Last Alliance. Maybe that's more themey. Maybe it's because it's a green alliance, so you keep your army bonus. But I actually quite like this. I mean, we've talked about it in the past that Galadriel is amazing. Elendil is one of my favorite heroes. And the captain of Numenor is, yeah, it's such a value captain profile. I would say that I probably would prefer Galadriel as the leader here. I think in most scenarios, she's probably the better leader. You can just throw Elendil into combat. I mean, the only thing is Contest of Champions, right? And I would just say don't play around that.
Yeah, if there's a veto system or pre-select, like a lot of events you go to, you're not going to need to have the leader that can kill. But my one suggestion would maybe be you can afford to drop like 2 guys, and then you can use 10 points from that to upgrade another Galadrium to a knight, and then the other 10 points to give Elendil the shield and the captain of Numenor the shield. And maybe the heavy armor as well. I think you want to have him up at that D7 level because you only have a couple heroes in the list that can fight. And a fight 5 D7 captain is really good at just like being a roadblock if you need it to, as well as the hitter when he's like still mounted with a lance.
Yeah, I feel like he is a little bit of aversion to shields here. Like the Warrior of Numenor with banner, definitely take a shield on that one. And then I would even say, as much as I know like people like min-max with like the spear and bow combo, I don't love spear ranked on the elves with no shields because, you know, you think you have like a D6 like front line, but you'd be surprised at, you know, if you get unlucky, you lose a couple of the front line elves first, you know, your second rank is going to fall really quickly.
I agree with everything you guys have said. I don't know if I would add more cav to this list just because I think 40 is a nice rounded number. I think going below 40 is fine because you're sort of an elite army, but I kind of like the numbers as they are right now. I think the only suggestion I would make is maybe bulk up the captain's warband a little more. I like the idea of having like a one drop or a really small micro drop, but I think overall in this scenario, it'd be better if he had like 6 to 8 guys in his warband just so you're less likely to be screwed over in Maelstrom. I think I would give this list a solid Valor. I think you could go to a tournament in this list, and in most situations, you would have the tools to deal with whatever is in front of you.
Yeah, I've actually wanted to play this kind of an alliance for a while. I just haven't really gotten around to it, but I do think there's a lot of potential there with the command from Galadriel and the fact that you have a hero who is strength 5 plus 1 to wound and can hurl combat for free. Like those two things together just sounds really good. Bow limits: you have 19 Numenorians, you could have 7 bows, you have 5. I feel like if you're going to kind of commit to the bows like you are, you might as well just get the last 2. That's a simple swap. And like, yeah, the Numenorians at D4, it's not great, but you have the blinding light to protect them from being shot back at, so it's not the worst. That's a small thing, though. It's not big. Maybe it's limited by the collection that he has. I don't know. But yeah, I think as of right now, because I don't know how well it performs on the table because I haven't seen it, I'm going to go with Valor, but I do see the potential for it to shoot up to a legend. Oh, and then the other thing I wanted to point out is I like that he put the banner on the Numenorean Warrior, so then he has a chance to have the magic resistance. Love to see that.
That's a good shout out. I actually agree with Ian here. Max Bow is in this list. You know, I don't like that kind of play style as much, but I think yeah, what Ian suggests actually makes sense this time.
Look, you were actually right for once.
You know, Broken Clock is right twice a day or something like that.
Well, it also works because you want to pull the opponent into you because then you can hopefully they get something out of position and you can exploit that with a command from Galadriel, right? So it fits into the play style.
Yeah, I, this one is actually really tough for me. Like, I actually, as much as I'm like criticizing this list, like these are all very, very minor like tweaks. And I actually really like the build of this list, like, a lot. And I actually think this could be something, like, I would also play in a competitive tournament. So I'm honestly, like, pretty, like, close to giving it, like, a low legend. But, yeah, I don't want to be a Ian here. I'm kind of in the middle. I think I would slightly go, like a high Valor, but with just a few small tweaks that, like, you know, switching your leader, putting a couple shields on certain models, you know, especially the banner. Yeah, I think that would just be enough to push it to legend.
The next list we have is from a patron named Maximilian. It is a 500-point fiefdoms list. So in the first warband, we have Prince Imrahil, who is the leader, with armored horse and lance. He's leading one Knight of Dol-Amroth on horse, with lance, two Knights of Dol-Amroth on foot, three axemen, one clansman, and three Blackroot Vale archers, and also five men-at-arms. Second warband, we have Angbor, leading one Knight of Dol-Amroth on foot, three axemen, two clansmen, three Blackroot Vale archers, and five men-at-arms. So it's a total of 31 models. I like this choice of heroes. Forlong might be slightly more popular, but at 500 points, I think Angbor being like the slightly cheaper one is a good call. Usually not a fan of the foot knights, because compared to a pikeman, you're paying 2 points to swap the pike for a shield, essentially, because they both have the potential fight five buff from Imrahil. They're not super efficient. Having the D6 in, like, access to the D6 in the army is kind of nice. And so, like, having a few of them, I think, is fine. I don't really have anything bad to say about this list. I think it's pretty well-balanced, and he kind of sprinkled in, like, every type of troop in there. You know, he has some fearless from the clansmen, and you know, I don't think I would change very much about this list.
I don't like the knights, foot knights either. Either put them on a horse or switch them to any of the other infantry, to be honest. Angbor, this is a tough one. I know he's not popular at all. Like, it's funny because, like, we all like him, but I think talking to other people outside our group, it seems like he's pretty underrated. I would say that in this particular list, I am a little iffy on him because he gives the clansmen the banner rerolls. And you don't really need that with Imrahil. It feels like kind of a wasted bonus. So, I mean, it's a good amount of models, but I don't know. I feel like Forlong would be kind of scary here. You would still be more than average, over 25 models, and then you would have these two beefy mounted heroes. So, as much as I like Angbor, I don't know if, yeah, Forlong might be the better pick here.
I don't mind the Angbor pick. I think it would be better if the composition was different. You drop three axemen, so you go down to 28 models, and then with those points, you can upgrade all three of the foot knights to mounted knights. So then you have, like, a nice component of maneuverability in this list, because it really does lack it aside from Imrahil, right? You don't have any march, you don't have any speed other than the cavalry. So you want to have, like, a little contingent of cavalry. And then on top of that, I would, you know, I would maximize the bow count. Again, because just you are kind of limited, like, with movement and stuff. And, like, and I mean, he's got the honesty bows, but, you know, your defense is low enough anyway. And because you have Angbor in there, they're going to be passing courage tests, like auto-passing courage tests if they're near him anyway. So their courage 2 isn't that much of a downside. And they still are very good archers. I mean, other than that, I think it is pretty solid if you made those changes. And the other thing that is nice about having Angbor that we haven't really talked about is that Hammerhill's banner is huge, but it's not, if he's like off on a flank, it's not going to cover the whole table. If Angbor goes off somewhere else, he can still take a contingent of guys and you're still going to have a nice little reroll there. And a strike. I mean, you know, he's got the two-handed weapon, so he's not the greatest fighter, but, you know, as long as you play smart with him, it's a reliable contingent that can fight by itself. It's a solid list.
It's not just a two-handed weapon. It's a broadsword. So basically, just roll sixes, then you'll be okay.
Yeah.
The game is way easier if you just roll a ton of sixes. I think I give it like a valor if the changes was made to have at least more than knights. The archers, sure, take or leave it depending on your playstyle. But I think at least that little swap to get the little contingent of knights, that would bring it up to a valor for me. Because the numbers are still good at 28 for 500 points if you do that. So,
I agree with both of your suggestions, but for me, this one gets a legend because I think he has everything that you need in a fiefdoms list, and like some of the stuff you guys suggested would help, but it's also more of a like a preference thing. I think there's many ways you can build a pretty solid fiefdoms list, and I think this is pretty good for 500 points.
Yeah, I think I would go in between you guys and go with a Valor here. I think it's solid, but maybe not something that would strike fear into my heart if I was to come up against it.
Okay, next we're going to move on to our only evil list of the day, and it is submitted by our patron Marco. And it is an Azog's Legion and Azog's Hunter Alliance. So from the Azog's Hunters portion, we have Fimbul the Hunter, but he's leading 600 orcs with bow and 6 hunter orcs. Okay, so actually, just calculated the warband. Fimbul does not have the warg, so this is Fimbul on foot.
What, Marco? I love you, man, but that's quite disappointing.
Is this better or worse than Alex taking Haldir without a bow?
Oh. This is on the wall of the Hall of Shame.
Well, kid, you blew it.
Okay. And then from the Azog's Legion portion, first warband, we have Azog with heavy armor and white warg. In his warband, it's a full warband of 18. He has 3 berserkers, 7 Gundabad orcs with spear and shield, Gundabad orc with banner and shield, 6 Gundabad warriors with a shield, 1 ogre, and 2 warbats. Third warband, the goblin mercenary captain, and in his warband there are 12 mercenaries. So this is a total of 800 points, 44 models, and 6 bows.
Honestly, he came back from the no warg on Fimbul. It was a clutch save. The rest of the list is pretty solid, but that first, not taking the warg on Fimbul is pretty bad. I think aside from that, the only small tweak I would say is I don't necessarily love taking the 12 goblin mercenary warband. I know there's the pros, like, it feels like when you drop him, like, it's like a full contingency force. But at the same time, you have basically 13 models and some might off the board for a good portion of the game. As a Watcher in the Water player, like, I know that feel, and where you're playing down like a good solid amount of points. And, you know, sometimes it could be hard to come back from, especially if they come in at like a suboptimal time.
Yeah, it's not just that, but also you have to deploy the whole warband wholly within the terrain. So the bigger the warband you have, the less terrain options you have to deploy as well. I've seen a certain opponent struggle to deploy all 13 models, and they ended up only being able to pick the largest terrain on the board, which their opponent saw coming.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I would say probably lean towards maybe 3 to 8 would be probably optimal.
I think mercenaries are 5 points each, right? Drop 4 of them, get the ward for Fimble, and then use the rest of the points to buy spears for all the other Gundam ads. That's probably the way I'd go. And then I think it's pretty solid.
Honestly, with that change, it just instantly gets into a legend.
Because the rest of his warbands are also maxed, so it's not like he could swap the mercenaries for more guys. So yeah, I agree. Just drops a few guys to get the warg and more gear for your warriors, and this list would be as good as it gets, I think. How much of a penalty are you guys giving for not having the warg?
It's such a simple change. Like, I'm not, I wouldn't.
It's a big deal, though.
He has, it goes from a legend to like a weak legend.
Because
Fimble's a fight five guy, right?
Yeah. Fimble's fight five. He doesn't even have many blades rule, so he's 2 attacks on foot. He's not even like a regular hunter or captain.
Okay, fine. It's a valor, and then if he does what we said, he goes to a legend.
You were so close.
Yeah. Fine. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that is, it's worth dropping those goblins. Like 40 models when you have Big Bad Azog and like the bats and the ogre in there, that's fine. And so much D6, yeah, it's fine to go from 40 to 44 or 44 to 40.
That's the thing. Like with the bats and stuff, you're already really good on the mobility front. If you don't want to upgrade the war gear, you could always upgrade like an orc to a berserker or something like that too.
I know it's a lot of Gundabad orc warriors that he had like in the army, and maybe some more hunter orcs would be nice, but they're all courage 3, and the berserkers I think are courage 6. So even though this army is entirely composed of orcs basically as the basic troops, for evil it actually has reasonable courage. Like it's got a few guys who can go in and charge the big nasties if they need to, and then the rest are okay. I mean, the hunter orc portion is bad, but It's not as bad as other, like, only orc armies that don't have fury.
Our next list of the day is from Max, the owner of MTM Printworks. And he submitted us a list that is Rivendell and Arnor Alliance. Now, personally, I know Max has been playing this alliance for a while. He's a big fan. And he just wants to get our thoughts on this list. So we have Elrond, who is the leader, leading 2 Knights of Rivendell, and he has armor and horse. And then a second warband with Círdan, leading 3 High Elves with spears and shields, and 1 High Elf with banner. And then in the Arnor contingent, we have King Arvedui, leading 11 Warriors of Arnor, and 3 Rangers of Arnor with spear, and then 1 Ranger of Arnor with no war gear. And then last warband is Malbeth, leading 8 Warriors of Arnor and 4 Rangers of Arnor. So this is a 750-point list.
Maybe Ian can go first on this one, since he's played this kind of disgusting list before.
I love this list. It's great. The composition is basically the same. It's just I had Glorfindel instead of Elrond, and then I also had a Captain of Arnor at 800 points. So it's pretty much the same. So, yeah, I mean, you swap in Elrond. I don't know how much that changes the list. I personally like the Fight 7 and the Resistance to Magic on my leader, because, like, I didn't know what kind of meta we were going into for, like, I took that to Nova, and I just wasn't sure what to expect. But for here, locally, Magic isn't as prevalent. So, yeah, I think the swap to Elrond is fine. Like, he's still, like, a crazy, like, a really good Elven Lord. And then, yeah, the Foresight points can be really annoying, and it's also something that is nice when you have, you know, you have the blinding light bubble and a bunch of bows. It suits the playstyle of the list having that. You basically just sit there with the Arnor contingent and the blinding light. You shoot whatever your opponent has till they come to you, and then you just grind them down. with a giant wall of defense six that like survive ignores wounds. And then yeah, you can just throw the few elves with spears and shields wherever you need to fight five. And then Elrond and Arvedui do their thing. It's a very, very grindy list, but it's a very, very good list. And it is very well rounded at taking on most armies. Like almost any army in the game can go up against and be like, okay, I can deal with this. Besides like Smaug, it would have trouble with Smaug. Maybe Sauron.
Did you take more elves in your list, Ian?
I think I had like 8 or 9 and 3 knights. So because I wanted to have the captain for a little bit of mobility, and I wanted to have like enough knights for mobility, and that was just like I just did a whole bunch of play testing to get to like figure out that's what I wanted. If he wants to, he can swap out. You know, he can swap out 2 elves with spears and shields for another knight, and then his numbers will stay the same. But then he gets, you know, he gets the extra mobility. But I think the minimum number of elves you want with spears and shields running around is 3.
Yeah.
To get fight 5 around, especially if you're facing a lot of like, you know, a lot of Rohan is around. Fight 5 is like a critical point to get to. Same thing if people are running Fel Beasts, it's a critical point to get to. So,
Dragon Emperor.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of like war gear and stuff he could do to change it. The only other thing he could do is maybe swap out one of the knights, 2 elves on foot, but then, you know, his mobility goes down by a lot and he doesn't have the march in there. So I think it's fine.
So for those of you who've listened to our episode covering Elrond, you'll know that I'm not a particular big fan of this hero. I think he's kind of overcosted, and the last few FAQs have just toned him down even more. I agree with Ian. I probably would have picked Glorfindel. I don't know if this like messes up the list for me. I still think that you can do well with it. I think the issue that I have with this kind of build, which was the same for Ian's list, was that you have 2 support heroes in there out of 4. Ian at least had a captain in there, so then you had 3 that could fight, whereas half your heroes are support heroes, and you probably wouldn't want either of them in combat. So you just have to play it a little more carefully. One small change I make is I would put the banner maybe in the Arnor Warband, one of the Arnor Warbands, because it'll be better protected with either Malbeth save or just having like a bigger warband, you know, surrounded by more models, more opportunities to reroll. But yeah, otherwise, the guys all covered it. You know, Círdan provides a lot of buffs to your army, so he has a lot of potential. Yeah, I think I'll go Valor for this one as well.
Yeah, it's the second time, I think, the first list as well, the banner bearer didn't give the shield. And I find that's like, if you're going to put a shield on anything, you put it on the banner bearer, because you never know when a situation arises where they're separated and you can't pass off the banner, or if you want a shield and get those double dice. And, you know, it might come down to that and saving your banner for banner VPs, you know, and win you the game. So that's definitely a must take. And then also, I think one thing you guys haven't mentioned, even though he has the knights, he doesn't have the march. And I think that's why Ian brought the captain, not just for the extra fighting, but the march. And I think what I'm worried about is like the mobility. Like, you're very, very strong, like rank and file shield wall list. But if you come up against anything like that needs to split your army apart, I'm just pretty worried. Like, Glorfindel also gives you the flexibility without March that, like, if you play a scenario like Seize the Prize, you can contest the prize in the first turn. Like, technically, you probably wouldn't want to, like, dismount Glorfindel for that, but, like, you can at least get there and, like, stand on top of it or something. Whereas Elrond, you're a little bit more limited. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a very, very strong alliance and very underrated, but I think this particular build, I might give it, like, maybe like on the higher end of fortitude for me. It's not optimized. But, you know, I with that being said, like, we know Max, he's a local here, and he's a strong player. So, I mean, he could probably still do well with it, but I just think this alliance could be probably done better.
I'm not sure I agree with that 100%, Richard. I think it is pretty optimized considering it's 750. If you're playing in a veto system where you can get rid of the scenarios where you 100% need March, like Seize the Prize, then it's fine. And one last thing I want to mention in Elrond's defense, he does kind of help solve the damage problem in this list with Wrath of Brunin. just knocking over a section of the enemy's front line, and this is a high fight army, so they should be winning a lot of those fights, right? So even though they're low strength, they'll be rolling a bunch of double dice. That's pretty good. And then, you know, random extra wounds from the strength two hit is nice. So it's not guaranteed, but it's not something to ignore. I would maybe give it a strong valor just overall. If it's like in the veto system, though, I think it pips it up. And like the weaknesses don't really matter as much.
I'll say this. Maybe I'm just not an Elrond fan in general. I think if he makes the swap to Glorfindel, then it easily bumps up a tier for list-wise. So maybe my criticism is with Elrond and not the list. I don't know. But I think we've talked about this before where like Elrond is probably the least cost-efficient elf lord aside from Celeborn.
Check out our Elrond audio episode. We go into a full breakdown for this hero.
Yeah, he's kind of like the tax if you want to build the all Rivendell Knights.
If tax is maybe a little harsh, he's still like pretty good. But I think he costs like what he...
He's like the Frodo Sam Gollum tax for Rangers of Ithilien.
It's not that bad.
The final list we're going to review today is from a patron named The Dragon Horde, and he actually told us that he's taking this one to Nova this year. It is 650 points, and it is a alliance of the Army of Lake Town, Erebor Reclaimed, and the Misty Mountains. So in the first contingent, we have Army of Lake Town. First Warband is led by the Master of Lake Town with 7 Lake Town Guard, 3 Lake Town Guard with Spear, and 5 Lake Town Guard with Spear and Bow. Second Warband is Alfred the Counselor, 5 Lake Town Guard, 4 Lake Town Guard with Spear, and 3 Lake Town Guard with Spear and Bow. In our Erebor Reclaim contingent, we have Thorin, King Under the Mountain, on Wargoat, leading 10 Iron Hills Dwarves with Shield, and 1 Iron Hills Dwarf with Spear, Shield, and Banner. And the final warband is Gwahir from the Misty Mountains, who is also the army leader.
I just want to add in, you guys should go check out his Instagram, Dragon Horde. I think he has some pictures of this army, and they are really, really well painted, too.
Yeah. He won Best Painted last Nova.
Yeah.
650 is an interesting points limit. It's not a lot. It's not like a value we play very often. So I don't know exactly how to rate this. How do you guys feel about the Iron Hills in the front rank with the Lake Town behind? Like the high defense is nice, and then the higher courage value, courage 4 at the front is nice compared to like the courage 2 of the Lake Town Guard, because that is like a reasonable weakness of the list is the lower courage.
Ian, I don't know if you're trying to be controversial here, but this is probably one of the most disgusting 650 point lists I've ever seen. So
I'm trying to poke holes in it before we say it's a legend, okay?
Dude, that is disgusting!
I just so we're clear.
Keep it exciting.
Besides Gwahir, it does lack movement. 42 is good at that point's value. I think that's really good. And then it has technically like double banners, right? Because the master has his bubble, and then there's a banner in there with Thorin. Which is important, because if Gwahir is fighting near that, then he actually gets a reroll, which is big to keep him fighting and doing stuff, especially if he gets charged. I don't know. So maybe I'm looking at this through a lens of like the lists that I normally play. From that lens, I don't think I would be super scared of this. I'd be like, it's an intimidating list for sure, but I wouldn't be scared from that. If it's showing up with some other kind of list that's not set up the way I normally take it, yeah, I'd be afraid.
I hear you. It's definitely not your typical list, and I think... I mean, that in itself might also take people off guard at 650 points where they're not expecting to play anything too crazy, but you're coming up against a Horde, an Eagle, and Thorin, Oakenshield, King Under the Mountain. That's pretty insane. Although another, I guess, alternative to this would be if you take Thorin, Oakenshield as a one drop, and then it kind of gets rid of what your issues with like mixing dwarves with Lake Town and then going Braga and then more models. So you stack up on might and then you probably go closer to 50 models.
So here's my thought on this. I agree with you guys that it needs change, because One Nova, I had a similar idea where I brought Iron Hills with S.H.I.E.L.D. back by Pajama Elves. This was last edition, but same idea. And it didn't work out for me as well as I thought it would on paper, because if you compare an Iron Hills warrior with a Khazad Doomdwarf, you're paying, what, 2 more points for 1 more strength and shield wall. And if you don't have Iron Hills in the back and only in the front, you'll get shield wall against shooting, but once you get into combat, it's going to be very hard to get that plus 1 defense when you lose a fight. So I think you would be overpaying for the shield wall rule. So I think either what Richard suggested, bulk up on Lake Town, or solidify your Iron Hills, moving some of your spears that you're giving your Lake Town archers and give them to half your Iron Hills. So you have like a solid phalanx of Iron Hills, like a battle line. Their role would be different though. They're not really just standing in the front, but then they'll kind of be their own contingent. But yeah, I agree that the warbands, I would tweak it to something like that. I don't like the composition of the dwarves in the front and then men in the back.
I see what you mean, but I have played also dwarves and elves alliance before, and my thing is that you don't have to mix them, especially because these men, yeah, they're lower defense, but they have the same fight value. So I don't find it mandatory. Like, I think they can still fight on two different contingents. I think you just have to use the dwarves as like maybe the anchor for like the area where you think the heavy hitters will crash into. So anchor flank or like the center of the battlefield, and then use the men to kind of do the surrounding. I think this still works well because they just need to fight separately.
Like I think I mentioned earlier, like the Courage 4 in the front rank is better than the Courage 2 of the Lake Town. And it's enough to make the Courage probably not an issue. That combined with the sheer numbers of the list, you'd probably be okay if you go up against like a Terror list. I still think it is weak against like a lot of bows or like a list. Well, Galadriel actually would be a pretty good counter to this, just with the like a good command caster and the blinding light to force you to come into them. But you know, all things considered, it is pretty solid. It's going to be slow, because you don't have the march and you got your front rank's going to be 5-inch moving dwarves, but you know, I think it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, Ian brings up a good point about shooting. So for those of you who've watched our Army of Lake Town episode with Andrew, you heard us talk about shooting a lot in that episode. This army has a surprisingly low number of bows. It's only got 8 Lake Town with bows, and I think one of the big advantages of allying in Lake Town is to have pretty strong shooting, so I would try to take advantage of that. So whatever amount of Lake Town you end up tweaking this list to have, I think you could go like 10 bows, just to mitigate your lack of mobility, you know, especially since you don't have Braga, right? Your mobility is a little bit lacking, so having more shooting helps with that. Man, I was ready to give it a legend. Like I was like, okay, maybe I can forgive like the Iron Hills not being kitted out the way I want, but it has like all amazing heroes. But then you guys started bringing up like other things. If it had Braga, it'd be an easy legend. Take out like 4 dwarves and then put in Braga. But I don't think it's quite there. I think it's almost a legend, and I think it's a very competitive list. But yeah, it's not how I would build this alliance.
Yo, Charles, like I kind of agree with you, but also I want to factor in like I don't want to look at this from like an 800 point lens, which I think kind of am. And something has to give when it is 650, and it's still a really solid, well-rounded list. And I like I said, I feel with Iron Hills in the front, like it was thought about, and the composition is like it's a lot of like thoughts have been put into it. I'm going to go with a soft legend. Like, it has weaknesses, but I think if you play it enough, you'll learn to play like around them. And you still do have a 12-inch move bird, which is very solid. So it's something.
Yeah, I think you guys talked me down a little bit from this list. When I first saw this, I was like, oh, this is like just pure filth. But yeah, I think either you get rid of the dwarf faction or just keep Thor and Oakenshield, but the regular Iron Hills dwarves, and then bring in Braga and more guys. Or, yeah, you give some of these dwarves spears to be able to fight separately a lot better. But I just think the hero compositions for this is just too much at 650. I agree with Ian. I think there's going to be weaknesses. Yeah, it doesn't have March either. But at 650, like, I think we're a little less picky with that, with this point's value, 500, 650, with, you know, there's going to be flaws. And I wouldn't want to play this list at all. Like, it's going to be tough. So, yeah, I think Legend for me.
I'd only feel, like, comfortable playing against this with, like, a good Magic caster, I think. That would do it, but, yeah.
Fair enough. All right, so this has been our patron list reviews. Guys, if you want your list reviewed, please check out our patron and see what we have there on our page. Let us know in the comments what you think of our ratings for these lists and which one is your favorite. Thank you all for watching. Look forward to the next episode of Into the West.